The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Needs no introduction. NBA Commissioner David Stern, you're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. What's happening?
Oh, nothing. We're just getting ready to host 92,000 of our friends at the Cowboy Stadium.
Who gets credit for this idea?
Mark Cuban.
It's a good idea.
And Jerry Jones.
Okay.
It's kind of a neat idea. It's kind of fun to contemplate.
And you're sold out, right?
You have a chance to do it.
And you're sold out?
Well, sellout is an interesting phrase because it has a stretchable sales. You know, it involves us and the fire marshal.
I gotcha.
So we have to see we have to see how that works. But every time we put a few more tickets on sale, as we figure out what the configuration is for a basketball game, they get picked up immediately. So that's a good thing.
All right. Anytime you do one of these things, people always throw at you all the negative stuff. So I'm throwing some positive stuff at you.
Fun.
Positive stuff first. Let's get it out of the way. I think this is the most talented the league has been since 93 in terms of young guys, guys in their prime, just every team having at least one guy good. Do you agree or disagree?
No, I agree. Going into the season, I was telling people privately here, because no one publicly ever believes me on stuff like that. They think we're just promoting, but it's getting back to the time when we had two on every team that somebody would want to go and, you know, pay to see.
Yeah,
and they're very young, and they're wonderfully talented, and it's just terrific. It really is a golden era for us, and we're having a real good time watching it. And there are a lot of players who want to get into the club, so to speak, of the elite, but they're not yet.
Would you obviously Michael is still number one during your reign of most popular. Would you say LeBron and Kobe have kind of hit that number two, number three level behind him in the last 25 years?
Without question. Although I'm not ready to knock Bird and Magic off that perch either.
Oh, I was talking about guys that came in.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And, you know, when you think of where Kobe was 6 years ago, he's got this trial. Who knows if his reputation is coming back. I mean, this is kind of amazing that he has gotten this popular. How do you feel like you helped in that regard?
Just by making sure we didn't rush to judgment and let the trial play out and the charges be withdrawn and let Kobe's playing speak for itself. He's a great player.
The young guys that you've gotten really since from LeBron on, I would say, I don't want to say from a character standpoint, from maybe a likability standpoint, just good guys, almost across the board, which you didn't really have the last decade.
Well,
what's different about this
decade?
I don't
want to say that about the last decade, but I will say that there has been, at the different rookie transition programs, you could see an interest level in our players rising, saying to us, we want to help. We want to do the right thing. We want people to like us, but we also recognize our responsibilities. And this is coming from youngsters, whether they were born in the U.S. or they were born outside the country. And after a while, you begin to understand that the messages that we're sending, whether it's NBA Cares or Basketball Without Borders or having people travel, it's really a growth experience that causes our players to better understand the impact that they have on kids around the world. And we really think that's pretty good. And we enjoy participating in the education of our players.
And the fact that they're not making a ton of money right away has probably helped. Actually, I think it's definitely helped.
Say it again.
You had guys
getting it to money?
Well, I think you had guys from the last generation, Kenny Anderson, Glenn Robinson, Derek Coleman, Larry Johnson. These guys were, you know, crazy rich right away. And sometimes that's pretty hard to deal with when you're 20 years old.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, our players are rich right away if they're draft picks. Maybe not crazy rich, but by comparison to where they were, where they come from and their age, you know, it's a lot of money for anybody, no matter where you come from. And so that still exists, but I think even at a higher level of money, they still have a real sense of social responsibility. And it's we work on it. You know, to have a player, even a veteran, travel to Africa, India, and see the combination of their own impact and also the levels of how people have so much less than we're accustomed to here is an interesting growth experience. And I think we wind up having probably up to 200 personnel travel between seasons or in the course of a year. And that's very constructive.
Do you, you know, somebody like Michael Beasley had some problems, I guess last season, but mostly this summer. And now it seems like he's gotten his life on track. As a league, do you think you're more prepared in 2010 to help somebody like that than you were in 1987? Or is it different?
I mean, I don't remember the year when I brought Satch Sanders in to say, you know, he was doing consulting out of the Center for the Study of Society in Northeastern, Study of Sports. And I said, how'd you like to do this for a living full time here? And so he started it. But yes, I mean, compared to where we were, we have a full range of programming under an employee assistance program. We have people on staff that are, you know, who are communicating with Michael and others. We have experts who are brought in to consult. We have real programs and the like. We have continuing education programs, life skills programs, financial education programs. There's an entire university here that we take very seriously because it's our responsibility to help mentor these young men as they come to us, not exactly versed and prepared for all of the life lessons that that are going to be taught to them. Thought I would spend as much time as I have, and I never thought our organization would commit such resources to it. And it's not just us. Every team has a player programs coordinator or player development coordinator and has its own additional programs. And we have team meetings. I mean, this is about this team awareness meetings. And we work with the Players Association across the board on this. So there's a very extensive, if not well-publicized, program, which is designed to offer support for the 400-some-odd young men in the NBA.
And as a society, we've probably gotten a lot smarter, and there's been a lot more awareness campaigns in general than there were.
Well, we have, but you got to wonder sometimes when you open the newspaper or watch the news whether we really have gotten as a society as smart as we hope to become.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Let's go. You've said basically everything you could say about arenas. The one thing I was interested in is the players' union really kind of seemed to help you out this time and not put up a fight, whereas 12 years ago with Sprewell, you know, they did put up a fight and they were, you know, and this time they almost seemed like they kind of agreed with you. Yeah, he should be punished for this. Why was this different this time around?
Well, this drug issue had been gun issue had been contemplated in the collective bargaining agreement. You know, it raised to a level where we agreed that there would be no guns. And in our facilities, in our team business and the like, whatever may be your right to register and carry a gun in other circumstances. So we had a pretty good conformity of interest. Number two, honestly, as soon as Gilbert got into the situation, which he did, he acknowledged the fact that he was very wrong. And, you know, and although I did have a meeting with the Players Association before I announced it, I mean, there were lots of options here, one of which could have been a full year rather than the remainder of the season.
Yeah.
And I decided that, you know, that the rest of the year, especially given the sentencing that is yet to come, was a fair response here, especially in light of Gilbert's real contrition and remorse and his public statements about it. And I think, I don't want to put words in the union's mouth, but on the range of things, I think Gilbert said he didn't want to challenge it, and the union accepted his judgment.
Do you feel like you work better with the union now than you did 12 years ago?
Oh, I think yes, because there's a familiarity that we have. I said to somebody, and I believe it, you know, there's no such situation that comes up in our business that Billy Hunter doesn't know what I'm thinking and I don't know what he's thinking.
Yeah. Because you guys are like an old married couple. You're like an old married couple.
Yeah, that's right. And it gets to be that way. We each have our constituencies to worry about, and we do. But I respect him for what he does. I think he respects me for what I do. And there are many things that we are very much on the same page on, which is how do we grow the pie before we have other arguments about how to whack it up.
Well, you did something really interesting. You made an offer for the new CBA 18 months before, you know, it's coming up, which I was surprised by in the timing of it right before All-Star Weekend. Obviously, it's going to be the big issue that everybody talks about at your press conference, all this stuff. Why'd you do it so early?
Well, we agreed with the players that we would start early. And so we began before this season. We've had several meetings already. We've given them all, you know, a load of financial data. And since they told us that they were bringing their player reps in and we should have a meeting at All-Star, we said, okay, we'll get you a proposal in enough time for you to get it to your people, and we can begin discussing it at All-Star. So it was that simple.
Okay.
That was the methodology based upon what we think is a good faith attempt to tell them what's on our mind. And this flows from the financial data that we have been providing to them over the past several months.
And, you know, initially maybe they don't totally trust the figures you're giving to them. At what point did they come around and say, all right, this, you're right, this actually looks like this is a real problem here?
You know, I don't want to put myself in their shoes, other than to say we've told them, here's the data. You have questions about it, we'll have your accountants go through it, have the economists go through it. We don't want to argue about the numbers. We're long past that. Mm. And we think that the goal of you know, having a business that causes owners to make investments while still fairly compensating the players is our goal, and that requires some profitability. Excuse me, and we have to do some work too. We've got to shore up some teams that aren't doing as well, and so we've got to get these processes beginning to flow, which is both collective bargaining and revenue sharing. And so we've got two committees working, the Labor Relations Committee and the Planning Committee, and they're on dual tracks about this. And honestly, there's only so many times you can meet with the other side and talk about the state of the world and not give them a specific proposal.
But the thing that I care the most about, and the thing that I think that would help the league most, is making it so that guaranteed contracts were not guaranteed the entire time. Maybe you get a 6-year contract, but after 3 years, the team can get out, or they can just renew it for another 3, something like that. I just think that that would save a team that gives $75 million to somebody who gets hurt or doesn't perform up to standard, whatever. They don't have any outs right now. How realistic is it to have semi-guaranteed contracts?
I think it's realistic, because remember, if the league is guaranteeing that a certain amount of money will be paid to the players as a group, the absence of a guaranteed contract just means it will be paid to the players that are deemed worthy of being on a roster.
Right. You're twisting the words around, basically.
Yeah, and well, I don't mean to...
No, no, I'm in a good way.
Twist it around. All I'm saying is that's right. You know, I understand the argument because I've been making it unsuccessfully, I might add, to unions for 30 years or
right.
more. But there's something to it, and it really is a way for the union and us to work together to improve the product, because really that's what we want to do. Because if the fans understand that the best players are out there trying to have the home team power to victory, that's good for business. It's going to sell tickets, sponsorship, TV ratings, and the like. And having, you know, sort of disheartened or disgruntled teams and players because of contractual situations is, you know, a terrible thing to have to deal with.
How is it not the case right now where the salaries are tied to the ebb and flow of the revenue? Like, for instance, this season and last season, your revenue went down, but the salaries stayed the same. Why can't you make it so that I make $15 million a year, but if our revenue goes down 10%, my contract goes down 10%?
Well, I want to say two things to that. One is the specific response is that we've never had that. The cap goes up or down, but an individual contract has not been modified by a change in revenues.
But why couldn't it, though?
It could be, but we're grappling with a more fundamental issue, is that we're at a revenue percentage right now with our players that is simply too high to power a sustainable business model.
And what was in your first offer to them? What was the percentage?
I'm not smart enough. It's too complex.
You ducked that one.
Yes.
I thought it
was a duck thing. We told the players, and it's our goal here. We don't want to. You know, there are certain propositions that we're happy to talk about generally. You know, our search for a sustainable business model, our partnership with the players, but we don't want to negotiate the specifics in
okay.
the media.
Well, you were talking, seems this time around, about maybe having a hard cap or a much harder cap, something like that. To me, I actually like the system the way it is now. I like the soft cap and the luxury tax. It's just, to me, it's the length of the contracts that is the real issue. Couldn't that be the compromise?
You know, it sounds that way at first, but you know, I'm the person who was here and fought for, back in 1983, the soft cap.
Okay.
It wasn't the players, it was the owners.
Right.
Because we didn't think that the cap should be used to break up teams.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, I don't want to get too personal, but, you know, if you've got Bird and McHale and Parrish and Ainge and DJ, as long as you're not using it, your monies, to take players from other teams, what difference does it make if you can go over the cap to re-sign your own players?
Yep.
And the same was true of the Laker team, and we were dealing with two Hall of Fame teams, which was kind of exciting. But that then takes you to a certain place that sets new salaries and higher salaries, and then you wind up paying out too high a percentage. And that's a real problem.
Well, and you're also, it almost seems like you have to protect the teams from themselves a little bit. Because last year, everybody knew the revenue was going down, and yet we still saw some dumb contracts last summer. So, you know, I think we need the non-guaranteed.
I don't know how to respond to that diplomatically.
I know you can.
Other than to suggest that there are pressures that you and I might not feel in discussing these things.
Yep.
To a general manager who has a choice, either... You know, you believe the agent who says this guy has a max offer.
Yeah.
Or you pass, and if he's right, you lose him and you get nothing. So you tend not to get looked at in a bad light by retaining a player.
Right.
But you tend to get some immediate reprobation if you lose a player.
I keep hearing the word contraction thrown around, and I feel like I have a pretty good feel for you after 26 years of having you in my life. To me, it seems like a badge of honor to you that you've never lost a team on your watch, and I just don't see that happening. Could it happen?
Maybe I'm misguided. You know, maybe on the downhill slide, I should reexamine some of the precepts that I've lived by. And one of those precepts was, it is my sacred duty to protect the jobs of all of our players and the investments of all of our owners.
Yep.
And indeed, expansion was another team, more revenue, another market, and 12 more jobs. Now we're actually closer to 15. I think I now understand that and accept that we have reached our max domestically.
Yep.
And we don't need any more at this moment.
I'm glad you realized that.
And if there were some way, you know, it's an interesting issue. That's all I'd say. Right now, our thoughts are not about contraction, and nor are there any teams rushing in to say, contract me, please.
Okay. But you do have teams that are battling some legitimate debt now.
We have debt limitations, so it's not about the debt. I mean, they do have debt, but that's not an accurate description the way the media has been playing that one.
Well, what's not accurate about it?
Our teams are laboring under too much expense and against too little revenue.
Right.
Now, you could deal with that in two ways. You could reduce the debt, or you could increase the revenues, or you could do both. And there are different models in different markets, but we have some teams that are struggling without question.
Let's say if my book had made $1 billion and I'm going to buy a team right now.
Have a team for you? It didn't make $1 billion. I thought right to the
almost
number one of the New York Times chart.
I was just short. I would go after the Warriors because it's a top eight TV market and they have great fans and they just need the right owner to turn them around, whatever. If I was shopping around some of these teams looking at the attendance and the debt that they have, I don't know if I'd want to buy a team like, this is going to make you feel awkward, but a team like the Bobcats. I don't know if I'd want to buy that team.
Come in and see me. Have I got a team for you?
Who's the team?
I tell you, the Bobcats. You got a brand new building in a market that led the league in attendance for some number of years.
A while ago, though.
Well, okay. So that market can support a team. It's gotten off to a rocky start with respect to a number of decisions about naming rights and cable deals and ticket sales and sponsorship and suites and a variety of things, and got off to a rocky start on the court. But the naming rights deal is now in place, the new cable deal is in place, and the last time I looked, if the season ended today, they'd be in the playoffs. So come on in. I'd like to talk to you about them. And I could probably get them for you a skosh cheaper than the Warriors.
Could put them on eBay. I actually agree with you. I think they're a possible sleeper in round one. But to me, that's a market that just seems like a college market to me. That would be my main concern.
We used to, I don't have the flow in front of me, but I think we were averaging 22,000-23,000 people a game back in 1988.
Yeah.
And they consistently led the league. So I'm not. I think that Charlotte is a good market, and I think we're going to see improved times there. But that's my job too. I'm always, in effect, a buyer of NBA franchises.
I have a tough question for you. This is going to be a tough one.
Finally.
I'm worried that consumer habits are shifting a little bit with professional sports. And, you look at the seats between the baskets, the good seats, all that stuff. Yeah, I can totally see why people would want to go. But when you're talking about the third deck and the stuff that these teams need to sell to really kind of either make a profit or break even, whatever, and I have this $3,000 TV at home, and it's I got HD, and I have the NBA package that I'm paying $200 for, and I can watch whatever game I want on the internet. Why would I not just stay home over go and pay for parking, and then I'm in the third deck, I can barely see the game? I think that's your biggest concern going into this decade. People just like being home.
Well, It's an interesting issue, and I have, you know, don't have exactly the concern that you have, because our teams have reacted well to it. They are changing their group sales practices. They're changing some of their pricing structures. They're enhancing concession opportunities at a lower price for the teams, people in the seats that you talk about. And I think that the entertainment experience for some period of time, I don't know how long, but for at least a decade and maybe more, is still going to be something that is to be experienced personally. I understand, you know, when you trade in your HD, which you could buy now for less than $3,000.
True.
For 3D.
That's common.
With the Dolby surround sound and smell-o-vision or whatever it is that you have. You can smell the hot dogs coming through. It's going to still put pressure on that. But as people stay home more because of the digital age, they nevertheless are going to, congregate and have a need to congregate. And I think those congregations will be houses of worship and houses of sports worship for as long into the future as you and I can see.
Well, the irony is that you guys have made it a lot more fun to stay home because of the package, because you have NBA TV. I can flip over and you guys are cutting in live to these different games. I got the internet. You have the broadband package and the internet where I can watch any game on my computer.
Well,
there's less of a necessity to go.
Yes, but at the same time, attendance in the worst economy of our lifetime is only down a couple of percent.
Yeah, but you know it's a slightly flawed statistic because they've dropped the dollar prices.
Okay, that doesn't make the attendance a flawed statistic. That means that our gate is down.
Your gate's down.
The gate is down more than the attendance, and that's accurate.
Yeah.
Our gate will be down probably 8 or 9%, whereas attendance is down 2. But that's called capitalism. In order to move, you can go into lots of stores and buy lots of products a lot cheaper. And by the way, if you want to go for a big ticket item, how about a house?
Yeah.
So we move along with the market. But actually, those things like NBA TV, League Pass, NBA.com, NBA League Pass Broadband, NBA Mobile, those all engage our fans, and most of them, want to go see a product in person at some period of time during the year.
I like how you twisted that around. I don't totally agree with you.
Why do you say twisted?
I have a
different take on it than you do. That's all. But by the way, you're right about that's our job, to make it a good experience wherever you can access the NBA.
Yeah. Well, the irony is that it's in 2010, it's the most fun it's ever been to be an NBA fan. I watched Brandon Jennings' 55-point game live. 10 years ago, I would have just seen the box score the next day.
No, it is great. There's everything, and if you didn't catch it live, you're going to watch it 10 minutes later. You know, in a good month or week, I can't remember that, we get 20 million video streams on NBA.com.
Yeah, a good example, I think two Fridays ago, LeBron versus Wade, that second quarter they had, which was just amazing.
Yeah.
And I missed it live, but I was able to go because I had the broadband thing. I was able to go and basically watch it on broadband DVR and relive it. And, you know, it's just the kind of stuff that you didn't have 10 years ago.
And about 10 minutes later, if you hadn't done that, you could have accessed YouTube on your BlackBerry or your iPhone and probably watched it there too.
Right. And you guys, was that a conscious decision just to make it easier, the YouTube stuff? Because some leagues have kind of resisted it.
Yeah. No, we believe in the distributed content model. That is to say, you're going to find us anyway, so we'd like to be out in front of you wherever you are. And as a result, we have the most friends on Facebook as a league, the most followers on Twitter, the most viewers on YouTube, you know, social media is a good place. And, of course, our players lead the pack. You know, sometimes I wish they didn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, Shaq is like a real star, and it's really great.
You're going to be cracking down on Twitter soon. I knew the guns was coming. You were just waiting on that one. I think poker is next and Twitter. Poker and Twitter is going to be done in a year. That's going to be your next two things.
I don't think so.
Because you can't have these guys playing on team planes for 20,000 or whatever.
No, I'm focusing on the Twitter. I'm focusing on the Twitter. We deal with them separately. I don't think so as to the Twitter.
You think you're just going to let them go?
Well, and hold them accountable for what they do.
Okay. Well, that
in other words, if you can't say something to the media in the locker room, then you can't say it to the world you can't tweet it to the world.
Right.
Okay. So you got to deal with it that way, and we're beginning to do that. With respect to gambling, I think it's going to require a little judgment by our teams. If you and I are on a plane and we want to play some poker or some gin at a reasonable amount, I don't think you tell adults they can't do that. On the other hand, if the game gets a little bit out of hand, then you got to say, come on, guys, this is not the place that we should be doing that.
If it's 15,000, I don't think that's a reasonable amount. Wait, we got to hit two things really quick.
By the way, should I go with them to the casinos and make sure they buy the right chips, Bill?
I think you should hire a couple people to accompany them, a couple of gambling managers.
Okay, thanks.
75-game season. Shorten it by 7 games. We don't have as many back-to-backs. Guys recover quicker. Why can't that happen?
You know, it's losing 7 games at and cutting out, as a result of that, probably close to $15 million a team. And then telling our players that they have to take that additional cut and the buildings not being filled. I just don't see it. I got a better idea. Put in a minute cap.
A minute cap? Interesting.
Sure.
So like that, 37
so that
minutes?
If a team has to have, must have 15 players or 14 players and the coach must have it, but then by the time the end of the season comes, he shrinks his rotation to 7, what happened to those other 8 guys?
Hmm.
You know, extend careers. Have a minute cap.
Well, it seems like I've talked to a few players about this, and all of them think the season's like between 7 and 10 games too long, and that their bodies would recover better if they didn't have so many back-to-backs and things like that.
Then rest their bodies. If you're a team and your medical and training staff focus on that, you know, push them less.
You're tough. 2 years in college versus 1 year in college before you get to enter the draft. Do you think that happens?
I just don't know. I think it's a good idea, but I'm not sure we'd give up much for it. And
are you happy with the current arrangement?
Yeah, I'm much happier with it.
I think
giving our teams an opportunity to see somebody play against elite competition in college, in the D League, in Europe, is a real plus for the quality of our game.
You're going to have to come back another time to discuss officiating because that's a whole other thing. And you know I've written about it.
I have your May article on in my office.
I know. You weren't happy.
And I think that I use it as a motivation to focus on forgiveness.
All right.
I want you to know I forgive you.
Well, but you know that I love the league. So when I write something like that, it's painful for me.
You know, in some cases, ignorance is an excuse. And I've forgiven you.
Are you satisfied that the Donahue thing was a one-guy thing, and that's it? Everybody else is okay. This is done. It's behind you. You'll never have to hear about it again.
Yes.
100%?
100%.
How has it affected the infrastructure that you had created pre-Donahue versus now?
Oh, it's our rules, our regulations, our recruitments, our analysis. We had begun getting better, but now we're regulating and over-regulating and just doing a lot more, and we think it's improved. Extra investigations, announcing the crews earlier, eliminating potential edges, all kinds of stuff.
All right. What about incorporating the D-League guys during the tail end of the season for teams that are already out of the playoffs?
Sort of like baseball. You can bring them up in September.
Yeah. What about that?
I don't know. You know, we actually have two. We've gone from 12 to 15 already, so we have 3 extra players. And many of those players have D-League experience.
All right. I get worried when the refs are the same age as my dad. I think that's a bad sign.
I don't think you're being fair to your dad.
He's only 62.
That's what I mean.
What? So you think my dad? See, I don't agree with you. See, this is why we're going to have to argue about this another
time. Okay, I'm game.
One last thing. Summer.
You know, that's why three officials help it. You know, you cover less ground. You can. We want experience rather than luck.
Well, in soccer, they do it the opposite way, though. They by the time you're 48, you're out.
Well, I think they're losing something.
All right. Well, we'll have to continue that another time.
I'd love to continue that.
But summer of 2010, you have to make a prediction. This is going to make history by predicting what team LeBron goes. This is going to be great. It'll be Lead Sports Business Journal tomorrow. Come on. Do it for me.
It's not happening. You're good, but you're not that good.
This is getting crazy, though. I mean, you've never had a summer like this with this many big names.
That's probably so. I just can't remember. I don't follow it as closely as you do.
Ultimately, it's a good thing.
There's interest. There's a lot of interest. Whatever he does, whether he stays, he goes. You know, I grew up in this league valuing no contraction and players staying with their existing teams. You know, I that may have been something that should change. I don't know. I don't think so.
So you could potentially get a Lakers-Cavaliers finals followed by the most fascinating summer in the history of the league. That's what you're looking at.
You know, who knows? That's why we play the games.
All right. David Stern.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. See you in Dallas. Good luck with the biggest basketball game.
In the history, the most attended basketball game in the history of the world.
All right. See you in Dallas.
Very good. Thanks, Bill.
All right, that's the final BS Report for this week. Coming back next week, you can subscribe to the BS Report on iTunes or find it at the ESPN.com Pod Center. Until next week.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Pod Center at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.